Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today we are going to be talking about a topic which I have been speaking about for years now. I'm sure you've heard it on many of the shows. It kind of ekes out like that little, you know, snake hiding from behind the bushes, but we all have to say it. It is becoming a reality. How do you take care of yourself and stop being a victim of the physicians? How many times, you know, we say, oh, my doctor knows everything about me. Oh, I have to go tell him, you know, I've got this little bump on my knee. Or I have to go run and tell him because, you know, I've got the sniffles and I'm going on my cruise tomorrow. And you walk in and you lay yourself out like this exposed victim for 15 minutes. And you're watching your watch, of course, to make sure you get that full 15 minutes. And then you walk out with a piece of paper saying, this is my cure. Let's go get my little orange bottle. I'm good to go no matter what I do from here on out. Hey, I don't have any participation in this. This is really passive medicine is what I've always called it. And really, it's time to become a participatory in your medicine. You have to pay attention. You have to say, if, you know, I'm overweight, maybe I have to do something about my diet. If I'm having trouble with sugar in my diet, maybe I need to limit what I'm eating instead of looking for the drug to stop its effects in my body. We have no control anymore over saying that we are the ones that are really in control of what goes in our body, what happens to our body, and exactly how it's going to progress through life. We still believe that it's outside of ourselves. It's someone else going to take care of us. And like I've always said here in the South, and I've got a picture on one of my websites, great big billboards all over town of a woman, and she's got her Mardi Gras beads on, and across the top it says, do what you wanna. I can do what I wanna. Because, and on the bottom right it says, because so-and-so's got my back, and it's a hospital logo. So you're going to go run yourself, do whatever you want to do, because so-and-so, when I'm ready, take my little card out of my pocket, and I'm just going to mosey on in, and they can fix everything that's wrong with me. Well, guys, that era is coming to a sharp close. My guest today is Dr. Patrick Neustadter. He is an MD, and he is also the author of Managing Your Doctor, The Smart Patient's Guide to Getting Effective, Affordable Healthcare. Well, you know, we're preaching to the choir here because we're both on the same page. We're going to keep saying it over and over again. We're going to say it in different ways, different language. You know, no matter what we have to do to be able to have people here, you really need to start taking care of yourself and get your butt in force. One time someone said to me, managing my health care, I already have a job. That's somebody else's job. Wow, really? So, Dr. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us today. I think we'll have a nice, lively time, correct?
I think so, yes. It sounds like I have a strong ally there. I'm very happy to see you.
Absolutely. I'm so happy you're here because, you know, sometimes we don't have too many people that want to actually speak out because they're so afraid of the backlash these days.
Well, yes, I'm not in a position to be backlashed at very much, but I'm certainly a strong proponent of the idea that people should be in charge of their own healthcare and, you know, need to be informed and involved.
Yeah, so, you know, so many people. I think it's really, if you look back at the generations, I'm almost 60 now, and I'm sure you're similar in age there. And when we look at that, we say after World War II, a lot of people came onto the antibiotic pony, and they knew they needed the doctor to be able to get that. So the idea of getting an antibiotic to fix the symptoms that you have and you were, quote, cured within a week or two, has really settled in, I think, the minds of people where they think that anything going forward, any disease my doctor talks about, any prescription he gives me is going to all have that same scenario. So I think we got tied into a sort of a type of habit or a type of expectation that that was going to be the paradigm every time we went to the physician. And now, so many decades later, we've dug our hole so deep, I don't think getting out of the swamp water is ever going to happen anytime soon. Don't you think that might be true?
Well, it may take a while, I have to say. Yes, I mean, and I agree. Antibiotics were one of the most effective medicines, and they did kind of sucker people into thinking that we can cure everything. And I think that mindset is gradually changing. There is a trend towards people believing that they can have a little more control for themselves. But I'm certainly in favor of encouraging that, and it sounds like you are as well. But you really have to be very analytical about what kind of treatments you're going to accept. Not everything is as effective as the antibiotics. If you look at antidepressants and things like that, and you look at the clinical studies, I mean, the studies show that they really have very little effect, even though that doesn't stop a lot of people taking them. But things are changing, and I'm trying to help things move in that direction towards people being more in charge for themselves.
Absolutely. You know, I had spoken with someone, I think it was a few months ago, and I said, how are you doing? And how is your day going? And they said, it's sad. And I said, okay, what's making you sad? Oh, it's this depression. And I said, what do you mean? My depression is making me sad, they answered. I said, well, what are you doing about it? Oh, well, I'm making sure I'm taking my drugs. And I went, wow, such a short life. And that was such a passive life to believe that it's still, again, all outside. So let's talk a little bit about your book, Managing Your Doctor. Whew, man, even that title is a touchy one, eh?
Well, I was trying to get people's attention.
Absolutely. You know, and managing your doctor, you know what the first word everybody says? I can't talk to him. I even had someone tell me the other day, oh, I can't bother the doctor with that stuff. He's really busy. I just need to tell him what I think he needs to hear. Wow, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, a good doctor will try very hard to find out what it is that you do want to say. But that is a problem. And this crazy busy healthcare system that we have where, you know, especially primary care doctors are so pushed for time all the time, it's difficult. And you have to manage things carefully. And, you know, one of the strategies is to know exactly what you're going to bring up to your doctor in the first place. I encourage people to make a list, make a prioritized list, but then to show it to your doctor. I mean, why I titled the book that, Managing Your Doctor, is the idea that it's a combination, a cooperation between the two of you. You need your doctor's expertise and abilities to order tests, write prescriptions, but you know, you want him to be listening to what your wants are and not just being paternalistic and telling you or doing whatever he thinks is the right thing.
You know, in my immediate family, a lot of my kids and stuff and acquaintances are a lot of different types of physicians, and we have these comments all the time, is that sometimes the patient comes in, and even with myself, they sit there and they keep telling me everything that's wrong with the last doctor instead of telling me why they're here and what is the problem. You know, in other words, or they're busy telling me all of this other stuff that maybe they think I don't need to hear, but they're just so nervous they can't even remember, and then the time ticks away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and doctors are very different, and they're not all sort of domineering and paternalistic and won't listen. But there's certainly enough of those to give the profession a bad name sometimes.
Right.
And also, you know, people get very frustrated by the time pressures.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I say, you need to use your time as efficiently as you possibly can. But I think, you know, there are things happening that are encouraging people, doctors, to change that attitude and
right.
to be better listeners and to pay a little more attention to what the patient is saying.
Let's start right at the top. Choosing your doctor. Everybody says, my insurance chooses my doctor. I don't have any choice in getting a doctor. I just go where they tell me to go. And then when I'm done there, after I spit everything out, then I go to the next place they tell me to go to. You know, and when I look at that, that may have been the paradigm for some people, but I know for myself, there's been many times where I'll say, you know, well, I'm not really interested in going back to that facility. I'm going to go to a different one, and here's their address. Are you on their list? And the office will look at me, and they're going, like, you don't get to choose. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I do get to choose. Or the idea of when they're handing prescriptions to you, you say, is this for 2 weeks, 6 months, or a year? Am I supposed to take this forever? And most of the time when people take a prescription, they just keep refilling it till they go back automatically one day and the doctor says no more refills. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so all of these paradigms are really going on in patients' lives. So really the essence of finding a doctor first that's actually vested in what how to help you.
Yes.
So, you know, and I mean, I've even gone to a doctor. I've sat down and she comes in and, you know, she's reading off, only got one piece of paper in her hand, the test results. And she says, this is the test result, doesn't show me or tell me. And this is what you're going to do. And you could check out at the front desk and they'll set you up. And I'll say, I never saw you before. You're a new doctor that came into the office. Did you read my chart? And do you know what she said? She said, no.
Yeah.
I said, well, then I would highly suggest you go back out again and come back in when you have.
Yeah.
And I left, coming back another day. And really to understand, and you talk about in the book, people have power. It's about you. It's not about the doctor's life. It's about yours. So share a little bit, you know, how this concept can get started about you can choose your doctors, your facilities, and how to speak up because people are afraid to speak up.
Yes, yeah. Well, there's two aspects. I mean, there's the practicalities of finding a doctor, and I have a whole chapter on getting the right doctor. And yes, you want somebody who participates with your insurance is an important part, although sometimes depends on your finances. You can pay out of pocket and get reimbursed by your insurance, but it tends to be more expensive if you go out of plan.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you have a selection of doctors to choose from, then my advice is, you know, go check them out. Go sound them out and see what they're like. And, you know, a good doctor will come out and talk to you and give you an idea of what their sort of take on how they manage their patients is. And you can try and find one that suits your particular wants. I mean, there's lots of other, you know, some people prefer a female, some people prefer an older doctor. There's all these kind of personal things. And the other thing I tell people is very important is that the whole practice is important. You know, you might have a wonderful doctor, but if you can't ever get an appointment or you can't get through on the phone or they never return a phone call, you know, that's not ideal. So you want to pay attention to those kind of things as well.
Yeah, that's really important because, and I've also said too, that you're only as good as your front desk. How many physicians have no clue what's going on at their front desk?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
don't know, you know,
if
they're turning around people or not. They don't even know if, what the people are saying. So sometimes a patient gets into you as a physician and to me, and they're the most aggressive or, you know, just downright ready for fight. You know, you don't know what happened.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I certainly know that from the doctor's point of view. You know, you get these people who are very irritated because they've had a bad run-in with some of the other staff in the office, and you've got to kind of calm them down. But it's, you know, this whole thing of that the receptionist sees their job as defending the patient, the doctor from the patient.
Right.
Which is a sort of interesting business model. But
yeah, and you also get the ones, I've been in practice long enough to know, is that you also get the ones who think that they're the doctor and the doctor is not the doctor.
Yes, there's all sorts of pitfalls. So you know, finding the right fit is very important and requires a bit of research. And the whole issue of, you know, managing your healthcare is to be informed. And it takes work is the trouble. It takes commitment and involvement and work. But it's really worth it. I mean, you know, to sort of say I'm going to delegate my healthcare to the profession is a kind of, you know, you can't predict what's going to happen in your health. And it's really worth having the skills to manage things so that if you do get in a bad situation, you're able to take charge for yourself.
And let's talk for a second about emergency rooms. Everyone says, hey, I'm just going to wait until something happens and I can always go to the ER. Yeah. Well, I've had this experience myself with kidney stones, is that I went to a hospital, very large hospital, very local, right around the corner, and gone in, and it was my second time for a different kidney stone, and the hospitalist came in and she said, you know, if you have one of these again, I think you need to go to the other hospital because they have the equipment to be able to help you better. All we can do is do the test and give you medication.
Yeah.
Well, and how many people would understand that there are different types of emergency rooms?
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe that you need to pay attention. Just because it says ER does not mean that it's the best place for your heart attack or your stroke. And it, even so, I've been in ERs where people are sitting in the waiting room, you know, hundreds at a time deep, and they'll mm-hmm. just give you a pail if you're bleeding. You can
yeah.
have a seat, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty tough place to be. But you really need to maybe say, maybe for that cut, maybe you should have gone to an urgent care where it would have been taken care of quicker. So really it's about, you know, filling things out and saying, what's going on in that paradigm, and where do I think I fit in?
Yeah. Well, emergency rooms are the right place to be if you are having a heart attack or a stroke or something like that. But a lot of people, you know, go with things that are, that don't need an emergency room, and then it's totally inappropriate. Emergency room doctors, I always say, you know, they either think you're going to die or you're going to sue them. So they, you know, they have this
yeah.
kind of catastrophic thinking paradigm. And so if you've got something that doesn't need emergency care, you're in the wrong place. And your primary care doctor will probably deal with it much better and have a much better understanding of what may be behind it all. You know, if you're having bad headaches or your blood pressure's too high or something like that, you're probably much better off with your own doctor who knows you, assuming you have one. And that's another issue, is that it's, you know, people are used to taking their cars in for preventive maintenance, but they're not so good about their bodies. So it's really worth having a doctor and having them know you and you know them, so that if something does happen, you're kind of set up already.
Yeah, because you can go into an ER and they're really looking at crisis management. That's their job, crisis management.
Yes.
Their job is not to fix you and be able to look over your whole body, run a whole scan from top to bottom and say, you know, point at certain things, say these are wrong, this is where you need to go next, and here's all your drugs, see you later. And they're also, if you have something going on, they're not going to always be shipping you up to surgery to be able to take care of it unless it is, quote, crisis management.
Yeah.
So, you know, if people think, oh, well, I have a bump here or there, I'm going to go to the ER, you're going to be given a name and to go for a doctor's appointment. You're not going to go up and be able to have that taken care of just because you put it off all of these years, and all of a sudden now you feel like you're scared and you're going to yell and scream about it.
Yeah, well, you know, in England, where I come from, you used to have a letter from your doctor to go to the casualty department, as they call it there.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, I mean,
big difference.
Yeah, I mean, but the other thing to say about emergency rooms is they're fantastically expensive, and people,
yes.
you know, finish up with these horrendous bills and get, you know, sticker shock that's going to make them far sicker than they were in the first place.
Right.
From what it costs them, and that's because, as I say, the, you know, emergency room doctors have this kind of catastrophic thinking, so they do absolutely every test in the book, and
right.
oftentimes, you know, unnecessarily.
But yeah.
They think,
and you also to see physicians, you know, when they can't figure out what's going on in the ER, they're going to throw every drug at everything that is, quote, out of range and send you on your merry way. So it really is up to you to say, you know, those drugs he gave me are not supposed to fix me. Those drugs are only until I can get to the primary care doctor, and that's the important message there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
At this time, we're going to take a short break, as I'd like to share a product that I've been taking since December 2015, and I really feel the benefits every day. I'm sharing it because I really believe we need to start taking a few steps to improve our own health, without waiting for someone to always tell us what to do. With heart and blood vessel complications these days, I really believe it's high on my list of what to take today. And so I hope you take a minute to check out the link following the Cardio Miracle information.
Attention all women over 50 who are feeling listless and tired. Are you constantly hitting a wall? Are your day-to-day activities wearing you out? We have great news. Take control of your health and empower your body with a new exclusive formula of vital nutrients and antioxidants. Our product, Cardio Miracle, is an alternative health option that can improve your general health and give you that much-needed natural energy so you can accomplish everything on your to-do list without feeling exhausted. Cardio Miracle can help you to have the energy and power you need to deal with all the lumps, bumps, and general chaos of life. It's called Cardio Miracle because it improves your heart health while giving you natural energy and important vitamins and nutrients your body craves. Statistics tell us women are at a high risk for a cardiac event. Please inform yourself as options are available. Discover more about this new product at cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette, spelled all in lowercase, DrJeanette. Thousands of women like yourself, including Dr. Jeanette, have blessed their bodies and their hearts with the restorative power of Cardio Miracle. Learn more at cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette. That's cardiomiracle.com/Dr. Jeanette.
Let's talk about the power of getting a second opinion. I've heard people say, I'm not getting a second opinion. I've been with this doctor for 50 years. He knows his stuff, you know. And when I went to school in the 70s and the 80s, you know, it was you had to go to a library to get certain books. Certain books were only at certain libraries. I can remember in the Northeast, I had to go to Yale all the time to get certain medical books to be able to study from. Now, every darn thing in the world is on the Internet, you know, and you can get whatever you want to be able to study, yet you expect your physician, who may have had school in the 70s and 80s, with that amount of context in his brain, you know, the brain can only hold so much over all these decades, and we keep giving them more and giving them more, and all of a sudden the Internet came around, and people say, well, if it's on the Internet, my doctor must know it. Well, dude, how big do you think your doctor's head is, you know? Really, come on. You know, it's so unfair, this judging, you know, and there's so much judging of the physician to know everything, and that's really, you talk about it in your book, how can we really even stick to that anymore?
Yeah, well, yes, the information overload is a real, you know, a real issue. If you, the statistics are crazy. There's something like 5 million medical papers published every year, and obviously there's no way that any doctor can keep up with that. So you have to expect your doctor not to know everything, and that's a real
good
reason for you to research whatever's going on with you and know about it. And it's not uncommon for the patient to know more than the doctor, and that's not any particular fault of the doctors, but the doctors should be willing to recognize that, and that's a complaint that people have, that, you know, they are informed, but the doctor won't accept the fact that they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, hey, this is one story for the side of your website, which you can share in a moment, the website address, but did you ever go in the emergency room and have them Google you? Ha, been there, done that. Doctor goes right out, and he Googles you.
Really? No, I haven't.
And, yes, and I've even seen on many medical boards, medical blogs, where they said, do you Google your patients? And 90% of physicians said yes.
Huh.
How about that?
That's a new one to me. I haven't heard that. But certainly the Internet has revolutionized medicine. But I always say, you know, it's a two-edged weapon. You've got to be careful about what information you're accessing. Great quote from the editor of the British Medical Journal saying, you know, a lot of the stuff out there is completely wrong, and that, you know, you really have to be selective about what websites you go to. And I have a chapter in the book about getting the right information, where I talk about, you know, how to know where to go and where to get the good information.
And I think sometimes we diss the second opinion, but really, if you think about it, When you're going to a new physician, you for a second opinion, you may be sharing something that maybe your doctor forgot, maybe your doctor didn't think it was important, or maybe you forgot to tell your physician. And when it comes up in your history, or you're sitting there reiterating your story,
yeah,
they may pick up on something that, like, whoa, why didn't you tell this to your other doctor? And
yeah,
you would say, oh, I thought they knew it. By osmosis, did it drop out of the sky, you know? Sometimes people miss things, or sometimes you forgot to tell them and you thought you told them.
Yeah.
So sometimes the second opinion
even
is
sort of
valuable.
Simple things, yes, two heads can be better,
yes,
than one. And as you say, there's lots of reasons why going for a second opinion may reveal stuff that doesn't come up in the first place. But,
right,
but you know, my take is if it's something really serious, if you're being, you know, if there's talk of surgery or some kind of chemotherapy,
mm-hmm,
or something that's really going to have some adverse effects on you, that's a good trigger to go get a second opinion. And I talk about how to select the right specialist as well, which is a slightly different business to finding the right primary care doctor. On the whole, you don't care so much about their personality. You want to know what their credentials are and do they know what they're, you know, are they going to give you the definitive opinion? But
right,
on the whole, you know, it's a very good idea. I don't think people should be inhibited about the idea of getting a second opinion, nor should they be inhibited by their doctor's ego, you know, by the doctor feeling put out if they want to consult somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk for a second about medical records. Everybody thinks that, oh, everything is on the internet now, and, you know, all the doctors are talking, and everybody, it's a hunky-dory, and we're living in, you know, la-la land. And even to the point where people would say to me, I have my insurance card. My insurance card is my medical record. Everything is on there. I use it every time I go. Your insurance card is not your medical record. It's the payer. It is not your medical record.
Right.
And, you know, when people, I've said to them before, I says, it would be really wise for you to get a medical alert bracelet. They said, no, I have my insurance card. And I said, well, okay, let's just follow this scenario. An ambulance comes to your house. You're a diabetic. They give you a drug, and then you die. What did your insurance card do for you? And they would say, oh, but you could check it. You could run it and see my doctor's name is right there on the top of my card. And it's like, we expect now that the internet is here and everything is wired together, we're expecting even just a little piece of a card to be our vocal point when we can't.
Yep.
And that's really not the point. And even if someone says, my doctor has a great medical record system, see, he's got me punching this stuff on an iPad, that does not mean everything is linked. That just means he doesn't want to write it or it doesn't feel like it's getting typed, you know? And that's,
yeah,
important.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, another of my quotes is that, you know, information is everything. That the more the doctor knows about you, the better. So it really is, you know, in your best interest to gather as much information as possible. And in this day and age, you can get these, you know, digital credit cards or the Medic Alert bracelets and things like that,
right,
which contain, you know, which have your whole medical history on them. And sometimes it's some of the detail which, you know, you are not capable of remembering, but, you know, the results,
right,
of the cardiac stress test, the results of the MRI scan or the PET scan that you had 5 years ago, you know, can be absolutely crucial. And if you can,
mm-hmm,
have that information, you can certainly improve your chances of getting good medical care. And this
and
idea,
also too,
the doctor
the
knows everything,
of,
that's one of my complaints about the whole medical, you know, electronic medical,
correct,
record system. It's a great idea, but if the computers don't talk to each other, and they don't,
yes,
there's 150 different vendors all creating their own, you know,
yes,
independent systems, it's a madhouse.
And that's what happened just before they got ready to say that everything would be electronic records, is that all of these vendors went hog wild, and they went out to all of the physicians' offices, and, you know, the physician would then evaluate it, what was the cost of the system, and how much, quote, work was it going to bother his staff to go from paper to medical,
mm-hmm,
records.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of the, just as many as there are different types of physicians, there are that many different types of electronic medical records. And to also, there's also, I live in the South, there's still physicians doing things on paper. They're not going to be able to do the records. You know?
The old-fashioned in the South?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that was the biggest beef, and I think after Hurricane Katrina, all of the physicians here lost everything because everything was paper.
Yep.
They came back and they stood there and said, it's just gone.
Yeah.
And people outside of this area could not understand that because they just couldn't conceptualize what we were trying to say, is that things were gone. And now that everything's trying to be in a cloud or in, you know, wherever all of your Lulu stuff is now, that's what they're expecting, is that it will still be safe.
Yeah.
So you really do need to go, when you go into the physician, kind of keep an eye.
Yes.
Hey, if you really got a complicated case and stuff, and you've got a lot of things going on, I'm not so sure I'd be going to a physician that's still doing paper things when I'm bringing him. I've seen people come to me before. You know those big plastic containers they put your ornaments in after Christmas? They'd be full of their medical records, and they'd plop them down in front of me.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
want you to fix her.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to think about these things as you go and you make your choices.
Yeah. I mean, in the long run, I think it's the right direction to go, and I think it's sort of imperative. And I think in due course, the communication between the different systems will improve. But mm-hmm. we're just in this sort of, you know, fledgling period at the moment where things aren't very good, but hopefully they'll get better. But the whole implementation thing is a big to-do. I mean, there's a lot of irate doctors. I'm the medical director of this free medical clinic here in Fredericksburg in Virginia, and you know, trying to get people to come and volunteer and work and see patients is a bit of a challenge. And one of the factors that a lot of doctors bring up as to why they can't bear to, you know, come and see more patients at the end of the day is that they're struggling so hard with their implementation of their medical record system.
Right.
So it's a real
Absolutely.
Burden.
Absolutely. And I am the biggest proponent of scribes. One of our family members is a scribe
mm-hmm.
and working in the ER, and it is the most efficient thing ever. Physician walks around and talks. Scribe
yes.
follows his butt and types. And
yes.
they say, oh, I even had a physician that went, when I had mentioned about scribes, and he went off like nobody's business. He said, just what we need, another person to be able to pay for in the office. I said, don't you realize that scribe is the one that makes sure you, quote, sign your records within 24 hours so you can get your butt paid? Because if you don't, you don't have to follow it around. They're doing it for you and handing it to you at the end of the shift.
Yeah.
All you have to do is sign it. When you don't get paid, that's when you have so much admin. When you don't get paid, that's why you have to have people for collections. When you don't sign your paperwork, that's when you get insurance things coming back wrong.
Yeah.
Been there, done that. I've seen so many of this on the back end to know it's really a lot of the slip through with all of those employees. So maybe you just need to evaluate your employees, and maybe you need to get rid of some of them and get a few scribes. And he just went, you know?
well, that, you know, talking from a business point of view, you know, I was in this private practice for 24 years, and I was on the board of directors, and you know, the electronic medical records were very good from that point of view in that, you know, it allowed you to just send the bills straight to the insurance company without having to pay people to, you know, put all the information into the system. So it actually cuts back. And then, if you can replace those employees with scribes, that's a real benefit.
Yeah, and you know, it's absolutely incredible. The scribe company is now so inundated that they've taken over almost all of the emergency rooms in the larger places, and they're just working down on the lower ones and then going into offices because it's absolutely the most efficient way. You know, you don't have to, their brain is only focused on you. Instead of a staff member worrying about who's walking down the hall, why so-and-so didn't do the test, and, catch the lady going out the door because she didn't pay her copay, you know?
Yeah.
The scribe is focused on the physician, and that's what you do. And you want to look at these things, what you and I are bringing up. And the reason we're saying these is because this is sort of like you say, okay, maybe it's something I need to look at. What's going on here? Is there a lot of chaos in the office? Does it seem a little bit more streamlined?
Mm-hmm.
And even when I'm not feeling well, be alert to these things because that's your decision-making. And really, when you talk about managing your doctor in your book, it's really about focusing in on these things because if you ran the business, how would you like to see it perform? You wouldn't go to a place that, you know, was filthy dirty and it was totally in chaos and everybody's yelling and screaming from the front to the back, right?
Right. but you also wouldn't go to a business where the person doing business with you doesn't listen to you. It's an interesting, you know, the whole model, the business model of medicine is very different to other consumer products.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know whether it should be exactly the same as a consumer business otherwise, but I certainly think there's things that could be learned from, you know, general commerce that can be applied to the medical business.
Are you feeling despair or overwhelmed by your health or everyday life situations? Do you know what questions to ask and how to get help? Don't go it alone. Ask for help. Dr. Jeanette offers compassionate and comprehensive advocate support for health challenges. To download her free report, How to Get the Healthcare You Deserve, go to her website, www.drjeanettewellness.com. Anyone who downloads the information tonight will receive a complimentary 15-minute personal needs analysis consult with Dr. Gallagher for questions and answers. That website again for the free report download and free consult is www.drjeanettewellness.com. Just reach out and ask for help.
Second, about insurance. Everybody thinks it's the absolute piece of cake, you know, that this affordable care, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And the two things that were great, yeah, there's no lifetime cap now. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they're talking about the lifetime cap and the denied health care coverage. However, if you really need to be in tune to this, is that denied health care coverage, well, I didn't deny you. I'm an insurance company. I didn't deny you. Instead of just paying $400 a month, we just figured out that you had something done 3 years ago, and now your premium is $1,000. We, quote, did not deny you health care coverage. We're just rating you. That's it.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a lot of pitfalls. But, yes, I mean, it's a good thing that they cannot completely exclude you, but, yes, they can jack up your premiums to something horrendous and sort of effectively exclude you if you can't afford it. But you know, the benefit is that there's help for people who can't afford their premiums. The downside, I was just reading something in the AARP bulletin the other day about that, you know, there's now people are stuck with these huge deductibles.
Yes.
So that's the kind of trade-off for getting the lower premiums, it seems.
Well, I think really, I have been, like I said, I can see it from all the different sides, and I've really been on the lower end of understanding people with no insurance and really, you know, about their effective and how much money they have. Now, they will wager that if I've got maybe $500 or maybe $200 or maybe only $100 a month that I could squeeze out to be able to pay for insurance and I go to the doctor, does not mean that I'm going to be able to see a physician because I have to pay the deductible, then I have to pay a copay. So, and then I have to be able to afford that prescription. When really, if they look at their year and they say, I'm pretty much healthy, I just need my blood pressure checked and, you know, a few different things, and I'm only on one medication to keep my blood pressure maybe down a little bit lower, maybe I can see their side. And that's what they say, is that I'll pay to go to a doctor and to have them check my blood pressure and pay for my prescriptions. I don't. And using that same amount of money, you see what I'm saying? It just doesn't equate. The insurance run is not going to be beneficial for me. The other way is. And I think that's where a lot of struggle is going on right now, that everybody's saying, let's dump insurance on them because we don't want to take care of them later. Well, how about taking care of them now? They're not getting help now, so they are going to be a crisis later.
Yeah. Yeah, well... Yes, and it's a delicate game as to how you play it. You know, when one of the things is to, you know, the only good thing about having big deductibles is that it makes people self-insure to an extent, and that gives them a financial incentive to take care of their own health and to stay well. You know, if they have to pay something out of pocket, it's liable to make them think a little bit harder than if it's all completely paid for.
But then you just took out their expendable dollars to be able to get organic food, or you took out their expendable dollars to pay for their prescription. You know what I mean? And that's definitely, I can see with the AARP group, hey, anybody over 50 is definitely in this quandary right now. You know, do I really, that's really not working for them. And I think that we like to say that that's always the not insured or underinsured, but I think it's that population is growing quickly, which takes us back to what you do in Virginia is about the clinic that you work there, is that you may even have people come in and say, yeah, I have insurance, but you know what? I don't have 5 cents to give you for this visit.
Yeah.
I can't. What can I do? And they're coming in to you and or to other people in these other clinics, and when they're asked the question, do you have insurance, they're saying no, because they can't afford that deductible or copay.
Yeah. Well, I agree. Yes, the underinsured is a big issue that doesn't get a lot of attention. You know, the uninsured have been sort of in the news with the Affordable Care Act and, you know, trying to take care of them, and that number has diminished a lot. But yes, there's the underinsured. My advice to a lot of people is that just take out a catastrophic insurance, you know, which has a big deductible, and then just, you know, put money aside, self-insure. But the trouble is people see it that, you know, oh, I don't have to spend money on the insurance premium, so they go and spend it on beer or cigarettes or something.
Right. And I think that's a small percentage, because I really do think that if people knew that they can do that, really people will do that, you know. Let's also talk about, we're coming to almost the end, and we have about 10, 15 more minutes. But you also talk about dying is expensive. And, you know, I have worked with a lot of patients at end of life, and they would be in the hospital, and we knew that they were going to transition over to hospice or palliative care, yet they were still getting the drugs that it was like, are you seriously kidding me? Do I still need my statin? Do I still need my diabetes drugs? Mm-hmm. Are you still telling me that I need to still take my hormones? Mm-hmm. Really, are you kidding? You know? And I think that physicians, when it's so expensive at the end, it's more like rescue. You're kind of throwing everything in there, and you're saying, well, I don't want to take that off because I'm afraid. I'm afraid to stop taking that drug, you know, because it's kept me this far.
Yeah.
And you say, has it really kept you that far when you have 6 months to a year,
you
know? And then you have relatives that start coming in, you know, the helicopter family, you know, as they call it in the ER, is when, you know, hey, these people that live across the country or whatever and only see you once a year, once every 5 years, come in, and they have a whole list of stuff that their doctor said that they should do on your mother that's now in the ER.
I know, that's an interesting phenomenon, that it's very often the people that have the least to do with the patient that come and have the most demands for what should be done now when they're sort of in terminal care. But I put that chapter in the book because I think, you know, as per the quote from the Hastings Center at the beginning, a lot of people die badly. And the people don't step back and sort of look at the overall picture, I think, is a big part of the problem. You know, they're treating the kidney failure, or they're treating the cancer, or they're treating the heart failure, and they don't think about, well, is there really any point in giving people their medicine for their cholesterol still and things like this? And, you know, and the care tends to be fragmented, especially if you're in hospital. You know, each specialist is interested in their own particular bit, but nobody's really kind of looking at the overall picture, which is very important.
And also, too, we also talk about palliative care, which has come on the forefront in the past several years. I'm a biggest proponent of that. You know, any time I say anybody over the age of 60 that's in a hospital, when you're coming out and you're just not well and you've got a lot of things going on, you call in palliative care before you leave. And always to have things evaluated. I kind of call them as the team joining together. In other words, if an elder is leaving a hospital with 5 different prescriptions from 5 different doctors, palliative care can come in and look at it and say, they're duplicating. That's the same thing as this. Maybe this should be done. And there, I really see them as an overseer. And I think it's so important, yet so many people, they're afraid to use the word because they believe that that's equated to hospice, and it has nothing to do with being then going to hospice and end of life. Palliative care is about helping you now to be able to have a decent quality of life without taking too many drugs that maybe don't serve you or are duplicated or are acting against each other,
yeah.
You know?
Well, certainly that's, you know, that's a big issue, and I always mm-hmm. tell people that the handoff is the dangerous time, you know, when you're
yeah.
being handed off by the hospital staff to the home staff, then, you know, that's when mistakes occur, and you have to
yeah.
be very vigilant that all the medicines and all the instructions are understood and correct and, you know, jive with what you've actually been prescribed. I mean, hopefully your doctor will do that, but it depends, or home health can be very good for doing that. They'll come and help look after you in the home and check on that sort of thing. But yes, that is a problem. But that's not quite the same as end of life care. But, you know, hospice,
right.
I think, are a great organization, and most people, once they experience them, think that they're wonderful. But that,
yeah.
you know, but you've got to really be, you know, within 6 months of dying to be eligible for hospice usually.
And also, too, insurance is, if you use up that 6 months and you're still fine, you can reapply at another time.
Yes.
So it does happen. People think that, well, I don't want to use that golden ticket of my 6 months because mm-hmm. I'll never be able to get it back again. That isn't true. Sometimes when people are in hospice and a lot of meds have been pulled, or the patient realizes and starts to, you know, coming to terms with whatever's going on with them or their family or whatever it might be, the psychological and emotional self, they get a whole lot better, and they sometimes walk out of there. We've seen that happen, you know. And you just don't know, because really it's in the power of the patient to heal and cure themselves. It's just physicians are there to help, right?
Yes. Well, yes, and they have expertise, which is very useful to you. But, yes, I think you should be in charge and they should be doing what you want. But oftentimes you have to know what you want. You have to be sufficiently informed to be able to
right.
guide things. But that's the ideal, is that you know exactly what's going on and the doctor is taking your orders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a tough place to be when people are coming in with, you know, a printout that they want this drug and they're not going to leave until they get it, and then they wonder 6 months why they're in a, you know, in a problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, I always say it takes twice as long to tell somebody, you know, why you shouldn't have such and such a treatment than it does to propose it in the first place. But that's why you have to have good information. You know, you have to go to reliable sites that are going to give you the right information, and you have to know how to interpret it.
Great. Well, Dr. Patrick, we have come up on the end of the hour. It's been very quick. You know, you and I have talked pretty fast, and we kind of got through this. And, you know, I think there's a lot of information here. Could you share with the listeners about more information about your website and your book? That would be wonderful.
Well, as you announced at the beginning, yes, the book is Managing Your Doctor, the Smart Patient's Guide to Getting Effective, Affordable Healthcare. And the website is just managingyourdoctor.com. And I have sections there where people can write in with their questions. They can. I'm trying to get people to write in with any particular problems or issues that they've had, horror stories as I call them, because those are very helpful and useful both to me but for other people to read. But just, you know, I'm promoting this general idea that people, it's possible for people to be in charge of their own health. You have to be energized, you have to be interested, you have to be informed, but you can do it.
Yeah, it's definitely something that they need to pay attention to, because no one else is going to, you know.
When
you walk out of there, you're on your own, people.
Yes, well, if you look at the stats, you know, the number of medical errors, the cost of healthcare, you know, there's
yeah.
good reasons to want to have some control for yourself.
And, you know, and the show, I've always spoken about the old-fashioned doctor. We'll go back to the doctors in the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a doctor who, you know, when I had a sore throat, he came to the house and he would give me an injection of antibiotics and I was okay. But also, too, that same doctor, you know, when my father was ill, he would see him at work, you know, because he might have passed by work and saw him and said, gosh, your face is really red. Come in to me tomorrow. Hmm. Or if, you know, a doctor goes to the grocery store, you know, in a local community, and he says, oh, I saw you fall in the grocery store, and, you know, you didn't come in to see me. Could you come by? I really think we need to check you out. So what you really need to understand is that, Dr. Welby is no longer, because your physician is not seeing you in the grocery store. He does not know what kind of work you do. He doesn't see you at work, that maybe you didn't have on that safety strap, or maybe you know, that you should add on a hard hat, or maybe you were exposed to some fumes, and when you come in for your headaches, maybe it's your work thing, and maybe we need to talk about it. So really, the community doctor needs to be yourself and your patient advocate, or it needs to be someone around you that says, hey, it's raising a red flag, and let's think about this. So it's really important to get that information to your doctor, don't you think so?
Yes, yes, and that's one of, you know, when I was in practice in England, we did far more house calls, but
right.
weren't very efficient in the terms of the use of your time, but you certainly got a very good idea about, you know, a patient's overall environment and the kind of things that's liable to be influencing their health. So it was interesting from that point of view. Not to mention it was an interesting sociological experience to go and visit people's homes.
Absolutely, because you know what? So many times you can give them their drugs and you notice why they didn't take them and you see them on the counter. And when I do home visits myself, you know, when I was in Arizona, and you would ask them, you know, this is full. It was filled 3 weeks ago. What's up?
Yeah,
and they said, but, oh, it says you have to eat with it, and I didn't have enough money to get to sit down and have a full meal with it.
Yeah. But,
simple
but, you
things
know, an
like
interesting
that.
Development is this, the telemedicine in some ways is you know, taking us back to that in that you don't have to come into the doctor's office and they can, you know, effectively visit you at work. You can just, you know, pull them up on your computer and have a consultation. This is something coming, but it's not fully implemented yet.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Patrick, it has been a pleasure to be with you today. I'll tell you, you really shared a lot for the listeners, and I think you and I being on the same track, we just kind of went through it, and it's like time for people to learn that they need to be in control of their health. So I really thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it was a real pleasure.
Well, thank you so much. If you'd like to find out more information about Dr. Patrick Neustadter, his book is Managing Your Doctor. The link is on the bottom of today's show page, where it will take you directly to his website. Thank you so much for joining us today on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a wonderful day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit www.drjeanettewellness.com to schedule a phone appointment today with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.